We now had about enough farinaceous food for 2 meals all round, and sufficient seal to last for a month. Our 40 days' reserve sledging rations, packed on the sledges, we wished to keep till the last. But as one man philosophically remarked in his diary, it will do us all good to be hungry like this, for we will appreciate so much more the good things when we get home. Seals and penguins now seemed to studiously avoid us, and on taking stock of our provisions on March 21st, I found that we had only sufficient meat to last us for 10 days, and the blubber would not last that time even. So one biscuit had to be our midday meal. Our meals were now practically all seal meat, with one biscuit at midday. And I calculated that at this rate, allowing for a certain number of seals and penguins being caught, we could last for nearly 6 months. We were all very weak, though, and as soon as it appeared likely that we should leave our floe and take to the boats, I should have to considerably increase the ration. One day a huge sea leopard climbed onto the floe and attacked one of the men. Wild, hearing the shouting, ran out and shot it. When it was cut up, we found in its stomach several undigested fish. These we fried in some of its blubber, and so had our only fresh fish meal during the whole of our drift on the ice. As fuel is so scarce, we have had to resort to melting ice for drinking water in tins against our bodies, and we treat the tins of dog pemmican for breakfast similarly by keeping them in our sleeping bags all night. The last 2 teams of dogs were shot today, April 2nd, the carcasses being dressed for food. We had some of the dog meat cooked, and it was not at all bad, just like beef, but, of course, very tough. On April 5th we killed 2 seals, and this, with the sea leopard of a few days before, enabled us to slightly increase our ration. Everybody now felt much happier, such is the psychological effect of hunger appeased. On cold days a few strips of raw blubber were served out to all hands, and it is wonderful how it fortified us against the cold. Our stock of 40 days' sledging rations remained practically untouched, but once in the boats they were used at full strength. When we first settled down at Patience Camp the weather was very mild. New Year's Eve, however, was foggy and overcast, with some snow, and next day, though the temperature rose to 38 degrees Fahrenheit, it was abominably cold and wet underfoot. As a rule, during the first half of January, the weather was comparatively warm, so much so that we could dispense with our mitts and work outside for quite long periods with bare hands. Up till the 13th, it was exasperatingly warm and calm. This meant that our drift northwards, which was almost entirely dependent on the wind, was checked. A light southerly breeze on the 16th raised all our hopes, and as the temperature was dropping, we were looking forward to a period of favourable winds and a long drift north. On the 18th, it had developed into a howling southwesterly gale, rising next day to a regular blizzard with much drift. No one left the shelter of his tent except to feed the dogs, fetch the meals from the galley for his tent, or when his turn as watchman came round. For 6 days this lasted, when the drift subsided somewhat, though the southerly wind continued and we were able to get a glimpse of the sun. This showed us to have drifted 84 miles north in 6 days, the longest drift we had made. For weeks we had remained on the 67th parallel, and it seemed as though some obstruction was preventing us from passing it. By this amazing leap, however, we had crossed the Antarctic Circle, and were now 146 miles from the nearest land to the west of us, Snow Hill, and 357 miles from the South Orkneys, the first land directly to the north of us. As if to make up for this, an equally strong northeasterly wind sprang up next day, and not only stopped our northward drift, but set us back 3 miles to the south. As usual, high temperatures and wet fog accompanied these northerly winds, though the fog disappeared on the afternoon of January 25th, and we had the unusual spectacle of bright hot sun with a northeasterly wind. It was as hot a day as we had ever had. The temperature was 36 degrees Fahrenheit in the shade and nearly 80 degrees Fahrenheit inside the tents. This had an awful effect on the surface, covering it with pools and making it very treacherous to walk upon. 10 days of northerly winds rather damped our spirits, but a strong southerly wind on February 4th, backing later to southeast, carried us north again. High temperatures and northerly winds soon succeeded this, so that our average rate of northerly drift was about 1 mile a day in February. Throughout the month, the diaries record alternately a wet day, overcast and mild, and bright and cold with light southerly winds. The wind was now the vital factor with us, and the one topic of any real interest. The beginning of March brought cold, damp, calm weather, with much wet snow and overcast skies. The effect of the weather on our mental state was very marked. All hands felt much more cheerful on a bright, sunny day and looked forward with much more hope to the future than when it was dull and overcast. This had a much greater effect than an increase in rations. A southeasterly gale on the 13th, lasting for 5 days, sent us 20 miles north, and from now our good fortune, as far as the wind was concerned, never left us for any length of time. On the 20th, we experienced the worst blizzard we had had up to that time, though worse were to come after landing on Elephant Island. Thick snow fell, making it impossible to see the camp from 30 yards off. To go outside for a moment entailed getting covered all over with fine powdery snow, which required a great deal of brushing off before one could enter again. As the blizzard eased up, the temperature dropped and it became bitterly cold. In our weak condition, with torn, greasy clothes, we felt these sudden variations in temperature much more than we otherwise would have done. A calm, clear, magnificently warm day followed, and next day came a strong southerly blizzard. Drifts 4 feet deep covered everything, and we had to be continually digging up our scanty stock of meat to prevent its being lost altogether. We had taken advantage of the previous fine day to attempt to thaw out our blankets, which were frozen stiff and could be held out like pieces of sheet iron. But on this day, and for the next 2 or 3 also, it was impossible to do anything but get right inside one's frozen sleeping bag to try and get warm. Too cold to read or sew, we had to keep our hands well inside and pass the time in conversation with each other. The temperature was not strikingly low, as temperatures go down here, but the terrific winds penetrate the flimsy fabric of our fragile tents and create so much draught that it is impossible to keep warm within. At supper last night, our drinking water froze over in the tin in the tent before we could drink it. It is curious how thirsty we all are. 2 days of brilliant warm sunshine succeeded these cold times, and on March 29th we experienced, to us, the most amazing weather. It began to rain hard, and it was the first rain that we had seen since we left South Georgia 16 months ago. We regarded it as our first touch with civilization, and many of the men longed for the rain and fogs of London. Strong south winds with dull, overcast skies and occasional high temperatures were now our lot till April 7th, when the mist lifted and we could make out what appeared to be land to the north. Although the general drift of our ice floe had indicated to us that we must eventually drift north, our progress in that direction was not by any means uninterrupted. We were at the mercy of the wind and could no more control our drift than we could control the weather. A long spell of calm, still weather at the beginning of January caused us some anxiety by keeping us at about the latitude that we were in at the beginning of December. Towards the end of January, however, a long drift of 84 miles in a blizzard cheered us all up. This soon stopped, and we began a slight drift to the east. Our general drift now slowed up considerably, and by February 22nd we were still 80 miles from Paulet Island, which now was our objective. There was a hut there and some stores which had been taken down by the ship which went to the rescue of Nordenskjöld's expedition in 1904, and whose fitting out and equipment I had charge of. We remarked amongst ourselves what a strange turn of fate it would be if the very cases of provisions which I had ordered and sent out so many years before were now to support us during the coming winter. But this was not to be. March 5th found us about 40 miles south of the longitude of Paulet Island, but well to the east of it. And as the ice was still too much broken up to sledge over, it appeared as if we should be carried past it. By March 17th we were exactly on a level with Paulet Island, but 60 miles to the east. It might have been 600 for all the chance that we had of reaching it by sledging across the broken sea ice in its present condition. Our thoughts now turn to the Danger Islands, 35 miles away. It seems we are likely to drift up and down this coast from southwest to northeast and back again for some time yet before we finally clear the point of Joinville Island. Until we do, we cannot hope for much opening up, as the ice must be very congested against the southeast coast of the island, otherwise our failure to respond to the recent southeasterly gale cannot be well accounted for. In support of this, there has been some very heavy pressure on the northeast side of our floe, one immense block being upended to a height of 25 feet. We saw a Dominican gull fly over today, the first we have seen since leaving South Georgia. It is another sign of our proximity to land. We cut steps in this 25-foot slab, and it makes a fine lookout. When the weather clears, we confidently expect to see land. A heavy blizzard obscured our view till March 23rd. Land in sight was reported this morning. We were skeptical, but this afternoon it showed up unmistakably to the west, and there can be no further doubt about it. It is Joinville Island, and its serrated mountain ranges, all snow-clad, are just visible on the horizon. This barren, inhospitable-looking land would be a haven of refuge to us if we could but reach it. It would be ridiculous to make the attempt, though, with the ice all broken up as it is. It is too loose and broken to march over, yet not open enough to be able to launch the boats. For the next 2 or 3 days we saw ourselves slowly drifting past the land, longing to reach it, yet prevented from doing so by the ice between. And towards the end of March we saw Mount Haddington fade away into the distance. Our hopes were now centred on Elephant Island, or Clarence Island, which lay 100 miles almost due north of us. If we failed to reach either of them, we might try for South Georgia, but our chances of reaching it would be very small.